This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 6:13 in the evening and you're with Lynn and Kelvin, and our next story is about the concept of trying to appease or please everyone when it comes to political policy and how this results in pressure and conversely what that does to policy design and implementation. Now, this show actually is springing from one particular comment that came from the health minister, which was about the government's efforts to decriminalise drug abuse amidst criticism from some quarters. Here's the clip of what he said.
Issue of drug addiction should not be a political tool to gain political mileage. And I remind myself, I'm not here to score any political brownie points. I'm not here to gain a support popularity, because in a mixed demography like ours, as you very well know, it's always a double-edged sword. I don't think politicians in this country should try to appease everyone. They say you can't appease anyone anyway. The only way you want to appease everyone is to sell ice cream. Even then, there will be a lot of critics.
Okay, that was some very clear words from Dr. Zulkifli Ahmad, who is our health minister. And I think that highlights the struggles that probably every government around the world has to face, navigating between implementing their policies and agendas while making sure it receives popular support. And I guess recently we also saw this when Tun M sort of restarted the conversation on focusing the teaching of STEM in English.
Yeah, and I think in some ways this also relates to how policy U-turns have happened and continue to happen. A policy is introduced, then you hear loud voices from certain quarters. Yeah, criticizing it, basically saying that in some cases that it's an attack on a way of life. And then the policy ends up being retracted so that further studies can be done. So I think in all these things, we see how when policies introduced aren't done well, and when you try to please everybody, sometimes you end up not doing anything at all. And it also speaks, I think, to this idea of whether or not you're doing something that's right or whether or not you're doing something that's popular, because those two things don't always sit hand in hand.
And also who you choose to listen to and why. Why are they important to you? Are they important to you because they are a steady vote bank? Are they important to you because, well, they just happen to have issues that need solving?
Yeah, so in line with that, we wanted to hear from you as well. I mean, do you think that people-pleasing politics is a problem? Do you think that we've seen examples of that here in our country? And on the flip side, are you okay when the government introduces something deeply unpopular? You know, can you see the way through to something positive in that? Mm-hmm. You can call us at 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. In the meantime, we're crossing over to Bridget Welsh, Honorary Research Associate at the University of Nottingham Asia Research Institute. Bridget, always good to hear from you. So in your view, do Malaysian politicians overcorrect whenever there is criticism towards their proposals or policies? And is this something that's common in other countries as well?
Well, I think that what we see in Malaysia, that government actors and politicians tend to be somewhat defensive in responding to policy initiatives and criticism. And this has become more embedded as I think they've sort of been battled down and battle-weary in the last 2 years, in the sense that this has become a vicious cycle that has emerged. So even in areas such as the coronavirus and others where the government is actually providing and leaders are providing important information to the public, there's sort of sometimes a defensive and unnecessarily defensive response. And I think this is something that has evolved. I think that it varies across countries. Some places there's more confidence, and sometimes that in some places extends into arrogance in engaging with the public. Sometimes it's much more defensive. I think what's happening in Malaysia is that we've seen in the last 2 years a real shift in the political environment. And that's not just about a new government coming in, but in the sense that there's much more open discussion of issues, much more criticism being circulated. At the same time, there's a lot of fake news. And so because of that, there has been a kind of a different anybody in that hot seat would have had to face a different type of environment. And this has provoked some of these defensive answers by politicians.
Are there any benefits to this defensive strategy?
Well, I think, you know, it depends on the issue areas, right? Sometimes there's a need to be defensive on things that are important, and sometimes it needs to be about building confidence and sending messages. And I think where Pakatan Harapan has faced a challenge is that it's been a challenge that we've spoken about over a number of times over the past 2 years, which is the issue of having strategic communication, so laying out what the issues are. So rather than responding to questions, they don't set the narrative, they don't set the discussion about what the points are as clearly. And the focus is on the responses to the questions as opposed to what is being said about the policy per se or the particular sets of problems. And partly this is the way the media engages with Pakatan Harapan in this new environment and more generally. And part of it is that there is a lack of a kind of communication strategy and effectiveness and implementation of that strategy from the government.
Right. But of course, it's impossible to please everyone. So how can politicians choose what criticism they listen to and really pass through all of it?
Well, I think, you know, it's a big variation globally. There's some people who are very sensitive and tweet about it all night. And then there are others that are, you know, just ignore the things completely. I think what we have seen is that we have seen some level of responsiveness to issues on the part of Pakatan Harapan government in terms of responding to public criticism or demands. At the same time, where there has been less sense is where the direction is moving for the country and what the plans are and how they fit together. So I think this is the part that basically allows them to be more vulnerable to more criticism. And the sensitivities have become very entrenched, in part because that many of them are politicians are getting it from all sides. They're getting it from within, so as a result of the personal attacks and others that have happened. They're getting it from the public, and they're getting it from the political opposition that has now become stronger compared to where it was a year and a half ago. So I think that there these multiple sort of arenas contribute to sensitivity and defensiveness, which is understandable. But the bottom line is, however, is that I think that this can be addressed by having more confidence, by having a clear set of priorities, having a clear communication strategy, and figuring out how this can be revamping the engagement strategy with the electorate and with the public.
Right. And it's interesting to hear you say that about how politicians do actually seem to respond to pressures from internal and external sources. Because a while ago, we heard from political analyst James Chin, who said that political elites don't care what the general public thinks and that they're only interested in staying in power. What do you make of this, I guess, contradiction?
Well, I think that it is very clear that some of the politicians are interested in power, and many of those that are out of power want to be back in power. I mean, these are politicians are interested in power. We can't take that away from the reality of being a politician. At the same juncture, I think it's important not to make sweeping generalizations. There are some that are more sensitive, more engaged with the public than others, and I think this is true within the Pakatan Harapan government as a whole. And I think that what we have seen at the top, after multiple by-elections where the government is lost, you know, a failure to address, to make substantive changes in terms of a cabinet reshuffle or others, and to kind of, and that sends a signal that reinforces Professor Chin's analogy, which is the idea that they're not interested in listening to the public. And I think there's a legitimate court of reality that reflects some of the reasons for some elements of cynicism. I think there's also the elements of some aspect of engagement. And I think we're seeing this over the issue of the health crisis and the health policy issues that I think are substantive. And I think more is needed to help to appease the concerns of the general public and also to lay out and have more confidence building with the electorate and a sense of more inclusion and more respect towards the electorate. And I think this is something that needs to go much further than it has so far. But I think it's a bit too much to say that they're only interested in this, because I think that it's somewhere in between.
Okay, and from the point of view of the voting public then, what is it that you think we expect? That's a bit of an odd question, but I suppose, you know, is it the mindset that elected representatives know best, or is it instead more moving towards the idea that they have to listen to us?
Well, look, the reality is that there's always contradictions in these matters, right? On one hand, that most people in survey research want the government to solve all the problems. So they want the government, they think the government is best to be able to do that. And in order to be able to government to do that, they need to have the space and the autonomy and the capacity to be able to implement sets of policies. On the other hand, the electorate wants to listen to the messages that they think are important. And Malaysia is a very diverse country in terms of what those messages are. Some want more Islamic governance. Others want more liberal governance. Some people want more reforms. Others are not interested in reforms and are more interested in economic development and economic growth. And so the question becomes is how do these politicians see through these different messages and set those priorities? And where what is problematic is that the Pakatan Harapan has so many different perspectives within it. This reinforces the sense that the different messages are listening to different sets of people, so therefore it doesn't give a sense that things are actually being heard. I think in some small policy areas, there have been exceptions to this. And the public itself wants many things. I think they probably would, what we see in the surveys is they would like to have more engagement and more results. And the key areas that those are in the economy and of course, in aspects of government services.
And at what point do you cross the line from speaking to stakeholders to ending up with inaction or doing nothing at all?
Well, it's interesting that on the drug policy and the death penalty, on child marriage, you know, a lot of the resistance is actually within the government itself, dealing with the bureaucratic agencies. So, for example, on police reform, the resistance towards setting up a complaints body is coming from the police, not from the aspect of the public in this context. Similarly, so we have resistance to the death penalty coming from different parts of the factions within government. Different parties have different positions on this, and so therefore it's created a sense of things not moving forward. I think, you know, in these different sets of policy areas, the government has to make clear decisions. And when conflict comes from inside and there's been a lot of resistance also from bureaucratic actors, this has delayed the process of implementing some of these policies, which I think are really quite radically different. And some of them have actually been in the works for some time, and they reflect a gradual change, I think, for the better. So the drug policy is not just a Pakatan Harapan policy. It had its roots within Barisan Nasional, a reassessment of the issues of addiction, the issues of how to manage drugs within the context of where there are high addiction rates, especially in key states in the north, and they reflect a need for a rethinking of a policy that hasn't worked for decades. And this is something that has been ongoing among the policy actors in the health ministry, in different state levels, at different national levels. So I think, you know, getting over the obstacles, resistance within, and improved engagement with the publics about what those priorities are and why they're doing it, I think is an integral step of being able to move some of these policies forward. I think also prioritization. There's a lot of things going on at the same time. And, you know, I think most Malaysians, for example, right now are not interested in drug policy. They're interested in the coronavirus. So I think emphasis on the kind of policies that are relevant immediately in timing is also an integral element of how to engage the public, although I think it is important to begin the drug policy discussion.
Mm. And at what point does listening to public opinion potentially end up in pushing something that is just populist?
Well, you know, the problem has been that, you know, Pakatan Harapan has listened to different publics at different points of time that have led to different reversals. And what we have seen is that one of the cords of the policy has been a populist initiative, so focused on the B40, shared prosperity programs, and others. So it's all about being seen as being responsive or having immediate results and not necessarily fit within a larger set of plans or priorities of where the direction is. So the focal point of Pakatan Harapan has been its manifesto. And the manifesto was an election document. It shouldn't be a planning document for contemporary policy initiatives moving forward. And as a consequence, until they have a clear set of plans that are not just more ad hoc, then they do get the label of being populist against them.
If Pakatan truly just set forth with their own agenda without considering public opinion, how would that work out for them?
Well, first of all, there are many agendas within Pakatan Harapan. This is one of the challenges. You know, it is an umbrella coalition. And I think one has to recognize that for the first time in Malaysian history that it represents so many different views of where Malaysia should be and where it should go. And those divisions, you know, irrespective of personality divisions and that get a lot of attention in terms of leadership and other factors, the ideological differences within the coalition on issues of race, issues of religion, issues of the economic policy, and social policy and even the speed of the reforms are all within that coalition itself. And so these measures that get announced, then there's often pushback, even within the coalition itself. So how to get that agenda there? They have to find some more common ground and some key areas and build from the positive orientation of getting some of these things done, as opposed to get caught in a situation where they begin something and they get stuck and then they're seen as not delivering.
Bridget, thank you so much for joining us. That was Bridget Welsh, Honorary Research Associate at the University of Nottingham Asia Research Institute, talking about what happens, I suppose, when you have politicians and politics that's focused on people-pleasing and not necessarily on getting stuff done, and how that can actually end up backfiring, because that's something that we've seen over and over again, especially with the U-turns, especially with the announce something, get criticised and say, oh, we didn't mean it. So we would like to know, I mean, how do you feel about the government introducing potentially unpopular policies, even if they might be for the general good, but you don't like how they sound? Call us at 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be back after the 6:30 news. It's the evening edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.